Oingo Boingo, what the fuck? Eric ripped the record from my hand. Since Interlaken, the boarding arts high school Eric and I attended, perversely chose to run its weekends from Tuesday through Saturday, we got Sunday and Monday as our weekends, which meant our weekend was really reversed, as Sunday shall ever be Sunday, making Monday our Saturday. And on Monday, right after lunch, a couple of buses would load up with anybody who wanted a couple hours off campus, which was usually everybody, and drive the 20 miles into Traverse City, the nearest thing we had to a teeming metropolis. Traverse City wasn't much, but it was all we had, and most of us would eagerly anticipate Monday's trip out of the woods to spend a couple of hours wandering up and down Front Street. Everybody had their favorite hangouts. There was a store that sold all manner of useless knick-knackery, such as the extremely popular cotton tapestries most people use to brighten up their dorm rooms. There were a couple of lame bookstores. The local big boy was very popular among the female dancers. On several occasions, I sat with friends and watched them put away giant hot fudge sundaes that seemed to weigh about as much as they did. Of course, ice cream doesn't stay in a ballerina's body for long, but apparently the sinful sweetness going down made the painful trip back up a few minutes later well worth it. Needless to say, my primary destinations were the two record stores, where I'd greedily peruse the racks, oogling all the covers, and wondering what sonic treasures lay buried beneath.
On islands, we all run onto islands.
One day, while wandering around Midnight Records, I saw a display of EPs. I had never seen an EP before, but was immediately taken by the idea. Halfway between a single and an album, both in size and in price, a 10-inch EP, usually sporting four songs, offered the opportunity to try out a new, interesting band without blowing my entire allowance on some risky album that may very well end up sucking.
We're all islands.
At that point, I was still very new to buying music and took a lot of foolish chances. I have, for the most part, given up on buying some music because it comes wrapped in an interesting package, but at that point in my life, it was a pretty common occurrence, and one I would defend. One doesn't get a good music collection without buying some dogs, and I have plenty of flea-bitten mutts on my shelves. As I looked through the display, the EP that seemed the most interesting was by some band called Oingo Boingo. The cover featured one of the celebrated cat drawings by Lewis Wayne, made famous by psychiatrists as an illustrated journey into the mental maelstrom.
Where did I come from? I don't know.
Suffering from paranoid schizophrenia, Wayne's cat pictures became increasingly menacing and abstract, until by the end, the pictures have lost any resemblance to the physical world and are instead made up of violently angular shards of bright colors. The cat on the cover of the Oingo Boingo EP was about halfway through the continuum, still recognizably cat, but with menacing eyes, spiky fur, and brightly colored auras surrounding it. Back on the bus, Eric and Alan gave me relentless shit about it, but being my best friends, that was their job. Never do anything but rage. They laughed at the cover, they laughed at the name, and when they opened it up and read the liner notes, they laughed at those too. There was a credit on the inside thanking Jed the Fish for a strategic air support that practically had them wetting their pants. It was years later, when I moved to L.A., that I discovered that Jed the Fish was an influential DJ on L.A.'s legendary K-Rock, and, shockingly, that Oingo Boingo was actually popular in L.A., like Phil the Universal Amphitheater several nights in a row popular, but that was an undreamed of possibility in those sparse northern Michigan woods. One of my favorite things to do upon getting a new album, besides sniffing that fresh vinyl smell, was to read the lyrics before I listen to the music. Without hearing the music, it's often impossible to figure out how these lyrics are going to fit smoothly into a song.
Pass the time, lie in bed, hotel room, TV set, got to move, might be dead, catch a ride.
Oingo Boingo lyrics are some of the hardest to figure out. The songs are so quirky and the meter so strange that it often makes the rhythm of the lyrics impossible to figure out. So the whole way back from Traverse City, we pored over the lyric sheet, trying to make sense of the meter. When I was in the sixth grade, my chorus teacher picked a couple of truly surreal songs for us to perform at the Spring Sing. Both were songs that had been written around pre-existing texts, which just seemed like asking for trouble to me. Later, in my dance career, I would discover that some people preferred to choreograph a piece and then tried to find some music to go with it. Just as inconceivably backwards, if you ask me.
My name is Norman Bates. I'm just a normal guy. My name is Norman Bates. My name is Norman Bates. I'm just a normal guy.
And I also read about Landscape's supposed working method of shooting the video first, writing the words second, and composing the music last. But I think they're just lying.
Mother! Oh my God!
¶¶ It would be one thing if the text was written in even metered verse, as difficult as it may be to set, for example, Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven to music. Once you had figured out a musical phrase that matched the syllable count of the verses, you were pretty much home free. But these texts offered no such comfort. One of them was a poem by that most musical and even-tempoed poet, E.E. Cummings. Watching the poor composer try to twist a musical phrase around Sam was a man, grinned his grin, done his chores, laid him down, deep sleep, was somewhat entertaining, but the result was far from catchy and hummable. But the award for least forgiving pre-existing lyrics has to go to the poor, tortured soul who decided he would write a song using, as lyrics, the 50 nifty United States, in alphabetical order. Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Connecticut. What was he thinking? The result of the song, which has to have been the point, is that once you do learn it, you will forever be able to recite the 50 states in alphabetical order, something I'm now pretty much sure I'll be able to do until I die. But what a Herculean task, especially since he chose to leave them in order. It's one thing for Tom Lehrer to put the chemical elements to the music of Gilbert and Sullivan.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and golden protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. Isn't that interesting?
But at least he had the relative freedom to arrange them as he saw fit, and the added bonus that a lot of the elements actually rhyme.
There's holmium and helium and hafnium and erbium and phosphorus and francium and fluorine and terbium and manganese and mercury and molybdenum and magnesium and dysprosium and scandium and cerium and cesium and lead, praseodymium and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium, and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium, and cadmium and calcium and chromium and curium.
To try to wrap a smooth musical phrase around the impossibly bumpy landscape of alphabetical state names is just too much, as is clearly evident to anybody who's ever actually heard the song.
These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
But I digress. The lyrics were cynical and clever and angry and funny, but it was when we got back to the dorm and I put the record on that the true magic of Oingo Boingo became clear. The songs were bouncy and angular, the band was improbably and, for the time, uncoolly large, encompassing a full horn section in addition to the usual guitars, bass, keyboard, drums suspects.
Johnny was bad even as a child, everybody could tell. Everyone said if you don't get straight, I'll surely go to hell. But Johnny didn't care, he wasn't out by the time that he was 10 years old. He didn't want to do what he was told. Just a prankster, juvenile gangster. His teachers didn't understand, they kicked him out of school at an early age just because he didn't want to learn things how to do.
interests. He liked to burn things.
The music careened around, stopped on a dime, turned a sharp corner, and sped off down some other road, only to quickly turn another sharp corner.
The lady down the block, she had her radio, the Johnny wanted oh so bad, and so he took her to the first chance he had, and then he shot her in the leg. But this is what she said.
Only a man.
You really can't blame him.
Only a man.
Society made him.
Only a man.
He's our responsibility. Oh, 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 oh.
Only a man.
He really couldn't help it.
Only a man.
He didn't want to do it.
Only a man.
He's underprivileged and abused. Perhaps a little bit confused.
Oh, 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 oh. It's not his fault that he can't be blamed. Society's made him.
It was quirky and engaging and impossible to predict, and it made me giggle to listen to.
Hey there, Johnny, you really don't fool me. You get away with murder and you think it's funny. You don't give a damn if we live or if we die. Oh, 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 oh. Hey there, Johnny boy, I hope you cry.
I loved it right away, but Eric and Alan were a little slower to recognize its charms. Eventually, thanks to my incessant playing of it, they became as big fans of the EP as I was, and we used to challenge each other to sing along to the whole record without missing a word, something we were all able to do before long.
Living way under in a penthouse high, our steaks are rare and our martinis dry. Folks below, they say, ain't the hell with them, I really don't care. Try to be one of the agents, Mr. Shopping spree, a breakfast in New York dinner in Paris. Hanging out with Lynn and Susie, have a massage in a jacuzzi, live in the bed and see what's on TV. And to the night, everything's alright. Cooking and a wife, it's just alive. Yeah, it's just alive. Tell me, tell me, it's just alive. Oh, mama, 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 it's just alive.
Oingo Boingo quickly became one of my favorite bands, despite a mediocre first album. In fact, I liked them so much that they prompted me to go to my first concert. Growing up in rural Michigan, one didn't get a lot of choices when it came to seeing rock concerts. Bob Seger, anybody? But Oingo Boingo was on tour with the English Beat and the Police, and they were stopping at Pine Knob, and on the appointed day, I borrowed my stepfather's duster, picked up Alan and a bag of weed, and set off for the show.
This is where it all begins. Right here, on the outside looking in. I'm on the outside.
It's really quite miraculous we survived the experience. The weed took longer to get than expected, as usual, and we were running a little late when we finally hit the road. Halfway there, I thought I could shave a little time off the trip by passing a dozen cars in one go, until the camper at the head of the line suddenly turned left directly in front of me. Another half hour of hell-bent driving and we arrived at Pine Knob. I parked the car in some field and we ran in to take our seats in the outdoor auditorium. We were checking out the scene and smoking a joint when the announcer came on and said that, regrettably, Oingo Boingo would not be performing that night. I was crushed. But at least I was high and crushed, and we stayed and saw the English Beat, pretty good, and the Police, excellent, and decided the evening was a success after all. Afterwards, we streamed out with the hordes and realized we hadn't the faintest idea of where we were parked. There were thousands of cars in a dozen fields, and really, we could have been anywhere. Just as the enormity of how lost we were struck us, we walked directly into the back of the duster. Divine Providence was with us, a little karmic retribution for not getting to see Oingo Boingo, and, fortunately, stayed with us until we got home. By the time we got out of the parking field, I realized how tired I was, so I enlisted Alan to help keep me awake on the hour drive home. He agreed and promptly passed out. I concentrated as hard as I could on driving the car and staying awake, and then I experienced one of the most frightening things I've ever endured. I woke up driving a car. I was so scared that I had fallen asleep and had so much adrenaline flowing through my veins that I was jolted wide awake for about 3 minutes, and then it happened again. Somehow, we managed to get home in one piece. Oingo Boingo's second album, Nothing to Fear, came out the following summer. Songwriter Danny Elfman was at his best when he was angry, and he got angry often, at everything from couch potatoes to bugs to more personal demons. He's also pretty mad about the notion that there's nothing to fear but fear itself. From where he sits, there's plenty to fear, and much of the title song is a catalog of reasons not to be cheerful, from imminent nuclear devastation to child molesters.
There's nothing to fear.
Although Elfman's songs are very smart and very quirky, they are helped immeasurably by guitarist Steve Bartek's arrangements. It's the multiple layers of sounds and textures playing against each other and the unusual scoring that really gives these songs life. Plus, he's a phenomenal and wildly underrated guitarist in his own right, and can squeeze and cajole some wondrously weird sounds out of his acts. Shortly after I moved to New York City, Oingo Boingo's third and best album was released, the remarkable Good for Your Soul. Sporting the last of their series of truly hallucinogenic album covers, this disc unleashes the full force of Elfman's anger and Bartek's rarefied arranging skills on such barn burners as Wake Up, It's 1984, and It Was, Good for Your Soul, and especially the momentous fever dream, Sweat. It was while supporting this album that I finally got to see them live, and they were just like I thought they'd be. Danny Elfman was a seething psychopath, leaping around in front of the rest of the band, which looked like it included everything from math teachers to hitmen to the socially and mentally challenged. The story is that founder Danny Elfman hated rock music, preferring to spend his time listening to the glorious dissonance of Stravinsky. Don't knock that as an influence. Notoriously oddball musician Frank Zappa used to listen to Edgard Varèse as a teen, and look how he turned out. Supposedly, the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo, as they were once called, were originally a street theater troupe and not a band. Tapped by his brother Richard to score his transcendently surreal film, The Forbidden Zone, Danny recruited his fellow performers, gave them instruments, and Oingo Boingo, the band, was formed. It's a good story, but I can't believe it's true. The musicianship is far too polished for that kind of random accident. Still, while they were on top of their game, there was nobody else like them. Woo! and then tragedy struck. If, during the early 1980s, I were to have made up a list of musicians that were the least likely to become top-tier film composers, I would have to admit that Danny Elfman would have appeared very near the top of that list. After all, there was nothing to indicate that his peculiar style of frenzied, angular non-pop would be so well-suited for large orchestras. But it is. He wrote the score for Pee-wee's Big Adventure and was off and running. Now, he is perhaps better known as a composer than as the former leader of a new wave band. The tragedy is that he was so successful as a composer that he both had less time for the band and, more importantly, less reason to be angry. Now, suddenly, with all that money and prestige, Bugs and Fear and Couch Potatoes and Socialists didn't seem so annoying. And with the loss of rage or the softening of age, Elfman's songs lost a lot of the bark and bite that made them so appealing. Good for Your Soul was the highest artistic point the band would hit, and from then on, success dragged each subsequent album further into the muck. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm glad someone like Elfman can be successful. It warms my heart to see such an obvious oddball do so well by straight society. I just wish it didn't mean the tempering of the vision that made him such an interesting and entertaining oddball to begin with.
Like a man, but something's wrong now.